Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. What is your idea of the ideal body? Mine has always been the mythic physique depicted in the sword and sandal films that were popular during my childhood. This heroic template was in turn inspired by the Greco-Roman statuary that depicted my Olympian ancestors. Both cinema and sculpture celebrated the mighty ones of old, the doers of great deeds. I'm currently in my 60s and no longer as able to lift heavy weights as I once did in my youth. However, I am determined to embody and express my ideal physique to the best of my ability for the remainder of my years. You're invited to accompany me on this quest and to share the details of your own journey on our podcasts or in our online groups. Today, I'm greatly honored to have Richard Hamilton Gibbs, the originator of the Mount Olympus lifestyle, which I've been experimenting with for about half a year now to great success. Greetings and welcome, Richard. How are you?
I'm very, very well, Hercules. It's like every day is a good day.
Yes, I agree. I see things in much the same way, that there you could focus on the difficulties or you could focus on the wonderful things. There are both, but whatever you choose to focus on, that's what your day is going to be like. And
yes. When we were talking before the show, you were talking about your experiences with ketogenic diets the various diets you've been on.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that I think it's worth you giving us a breakdown, a very quick one, of where you've been with your diet and how you've hit plateaus and you've stopped dead. Yeah.
Okay, I can start with that. And you, of course, have developed this lifestyle, and I've had a lot of success with it. But basically, at one point, we lived in Pennsylvania. It was about two decades ago, until about a decade ago. I had a large basement, and people are always getting rid of gym equipment. So within a very short period of time, I built a really impressive gym basement. I had leg press machines. I had machines that you could do multi positions. I had two benches. I had a squat rack. I had tons of weight. So it was great. And then I started looking into how can I become better at what I'm doing, which I always do, in regardless of which area of my life I'm focusing on. So I asked myself a question, because I was unwilling to take steroids. What did people do before steroids? And I read a lot of impressive bodybuilders' routines, you know, before steroids. And what a common element that I found was that they drank lots of milk. A lot of them recommended lots of citrus. So I was lactose intolerant, so I knew it would take me a while to get used to drinking a gallon of milk a day, which they recommended. But it took me over a year, but I finally got there. I was drinking a gallon of milk a day and eating six or so navel oranges a day. And for a while, that worked out great. I was huge, and I was muscular, and I felt great until the day I didn't. I started falling downstairs, which my wife finally convinced me to go to a doctor, because I'm Greek and we're...
Okay, hang on. Let's review that particular diet, because it's like it worked for a while and then you crashed and burned.
Right.
Okay. The science of diet, it got started in 1994, because ketogenic diets have always been used. Well, been used since 1926 by the medical profession.
Yes.
To treat childhood epilepsy. And it was the guy who made the movie Airplane. His son, when he, from basically 2 months old, he was having 200 seizures a day.
Wow.
And they put him on all sorts of drugs, and nothing worked. And eventually, somebody told him that Johns Hopkins Hospital, you know, had the last light burning on ketogenic diets. Nobody else in the country was practicing ketogenic diets. Well, he had a lot of money and a lot of rich Hollywood friends who knew all about his situation. So he took off to Johns Hopkins, and within 2 days, his son was having no seizures. And going from 200 to none with your baby when they're months old is amazing. You think you've got a dead kid on your hands. And the other thing is the drugs that he was taking didn't really help, but they made him vegetative. So he wasn't eating. You know, he was just knocked out all the time. So, you know, knock out the epilepsy, and, you know, suddenly he's a normal boy. So he started a fund, and the Charlie Foundation, which is named after his son, still on the air, pumped a lot of his money into ketogenic research. And this sparked the entire field of research. Now, you might know that Atkins came along in, I think, 1973 with high-protein, low-carbohydrate diet. Yeah?
Yes.
And everything about ketogenic diets, when it comes to modern research, it was all pretty much unknown. And since 1994, there have been tens of thousands of papers published. And one of the things I open my book with is the fraud that's been perpetrated on the American people. The coronary heart disease is caused by fat. Around about, just shortly before I went to publication, this fraud was published in the Journal of American Medical Association that the three Harvard professors who had written the paper that said it was fats, all their research had told them it's carbohydrates, right?
Yes.
That causes coronary heart disease. So the thing is that was published in 2016. So it's pretty recent stuff. And most people aren't keeping up with scientific papers. The other thing is this will never hit the press, the media, because the media gets huge amounts of funding from the two or three huge companies in the food production business in the United States. So the American people don't know about this stuff. And people get very shocked when they discover this. They think I'm a conspiracy theorist. Then they get online and they check out what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
In the book, I don't give references to specific papers. I just say in brackets, Google, and then what they have to Google.
Right.
And they can look at the thousands and thousands of entries and get enlightened that way. That way, I'm not a voice in the wilderness. So, your diet, if you were doing milk, first of all, milk, the sugar in milk is lactose.
Yes.
And lactose, babies make an enzyme that digests lactose, turns it into glucose, and galactose, that's another of the sugars. But the thing is that as we get older, most of us stop making lactose. Yeah? And it's a survival thing. Stop daddy from drinking baby's milk. Yeah? In times when there's a lot of hunger around, and famine has been the greatest enemy of humanity since the beginning of time, you know, make sure that the adults aren't stealing baby food. Yeah? And so, but this lactose intolerance is a huge problem for most people. And suggesting that huge quantities of milk, and not human milk, cow milk, is in some way good for people. Probably not. In fact, I have a book that a scientific friend of mine used to work at Lawrence Livermore Labs, and milk was his subject. And he wrote a book about milk. And in India, they consume a huge amount of milk. The people who are healthy in India consume a lot of milk are the ones who are exercising all day. Field workers, people out there, you know, sort of plowing the fields and picking the crops and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
People who were in sedentary occupations, you know, they were badly impacted by milk. Much higher rates of heart disease, general health, not nearly as good. So drinking a lot of milk is actually a bit of a disaster in terms of trying to get energy and to build muscle. Now, there are two studies out there which they deliberately looked at the maximum amount of protein that your body can uptake and utilize. And these studies were on people who were bodybuilders and extreme bodybuilders, you know, the ones who are, you know, like the Rock, can put on a lot of muscle and get very cut. And the most protein you can use, utilize, all the rest gets broken down to sugar. Okay? That's a bad
right.
case. But the most you can use is 0.6 grams per kilogram. The most intensive and efficient bodybuilders in the world could not exceed 0.6 grams per kilogram of body weight. Now,
wow.
If you divide your weight by 2.2, right, and then you've got kilograms, it comes about out to about 0.25 or quarter of a gram per pound. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you think 25 grams per 100 pounds, you know, you weigh 200 pounds lean body weight. No, we're not talking about, you know, you say you're at 8%, 10% body fat, and
mm-hmm.
you weigh 200 pounds. That's 50 grams of protein a day. That's less than 2 ounces.
Wow, right. That's usually as much as you have in one protein shake. And if you're using with high protein, you have a lot more than that. I remember it was recommended that it was a gram of protein per pound of lean body weight.
yeah.
So during the course of the day,
is,
100 grams.
The fastest you'll ever use protein is when you're a baby and you're growing at a phenomenal speed, and you need the energy, right? And you need the protein. See, the confusion people have is they think protein makes muscle. And that's the same fallacy of saying we've got a huge construction project on, and what we're going to do is we're going to send 10 million bricks to the site.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, but who's going to build the houses? Who's going to put the energy in to do the building? And it's not protein that does its own building. Done a self-assembled, it requires energy to actually put new muscle cells together with all the other things that muscle cells need. Yeah. So the barrier is not protein, it's energy efficiency. And one of the things I outline in my book is there's chapters on all sorts of stuff, and I keep them as short as possible and make them as simple as possible, because it's just
that
you don't need the science. You can look up the science. Yeah. But the thing that's about energy production, fats
mm-hmm.
give you 9 calories per gram, with carbohydrates and protein, when they're, you know, you, they give you 4 calories a gram. Now, the other thing that people don't generally know is that fats burn 42%, they produce 42% more energy from the same quantity of oxygen. Now, think about a runner who is eating a lot of carbs and he's, you know, doing long distance.
Mm-hmm.
And he's accustomed to running at 95% of his potential, aerobic potential, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's got 5% headroom. And when he has to, he can kick into an anaerobic mode and push it, but he's got to make that up somewhere. And it's when you're in your anaerobic mode that you start to destroy cells, because they're not getting nearly enough oxygen. Some are getting enough, many are not. And they can't resuscitate themselves without oxygen, right?
Right.
Now, if you've got, imagine, you've got 42% more efficient burning power when you're burning fats. That 42% means that suddenly your headroom goes from 5% to about 47%, right? So suddenly you're running as fast as you have ever run, and you've got heaps and heaps of oxygen capacity. That means you can really start to improve your speeds. And the thing is, when you've got athletes who are talking about they're going to do a competition, throw the carbohydrate advice out the window, mix a 50-50 mixture of peanut butter and coconut oil. Because coconut oil is shorter chain fats. And your body metabolizes shorter chain fats differently to very differently to the long chain fats.
Mm-hmm.
There is a mechanism in our bodies sorry about the noise, turning off a heater. There's a mechanism in our bodies called the carnitine shuttle. It's, let's say, inside a cell, muscle cells, say you've got 300 to 600 mitochondria. They're the little powerhouses that combine oxygen and fats and glucose even to produce energy. That's where the oxygen gets burnt with the fuel, right? This fireplace. And the thing about the short chain fats in coconut oil is that they can pass into the mitochondria to get burnt, produce energy, without the going through the carnitine shuttle. Now, a lot of people, when they first get on ketogenic diets, their transport mechanisms are very rusty. Your mitochondria don't need to do much at all. If anything, if you're loading up on sugar and carbohydrates and pasta, all that sort of thing, this mechanism for burning fats falls into disuse. Now, you've run into people who, in the past, you've run into people who have been pocket battleships. They're not very big, but God, can they lift a lot of weight? And the thing is, they can jump. They'd be 5'8" and they can dunk a basketball. And the reason is they are burning a lot of fat. Because when you burn fat in the mitochondria, what's happening is that ADP is coming in. It's a low energy version, converted to ATP, which then goes out into the cell and releases that energy, gets converted back to ADP, goes back to the mitochondria to get recharged, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's that mechanism, right? Once you start getting your mitochondria rehabbed, your body, every cell has to make more ADP, or adenosine monophosphate, AMP, ADP, ATP, to be able to transfer that energy. And that energy transfer is essential if you want to be healthy and fit and have your body be able to respond. That whole process can take 6 weeks to wind up, to get busy. And a lot of people who have existing medical problems, going cold turkey keto it's crazy. It's like starving yourself, right?
Uh-huh.
Anybody who is starting keto should be getting into coconut oil. Cook with coconut oil. Cook everything with coconut oil. Saturate everything you can with coconut oil.
Coconut oil, olive oil, avocado oil, and MCT oil. I alternate between those, and I have a preference for olive oil. That's cultural bias because I grew up with it and I'm familiar with it. But those are the oils that I use primarily.
Yeah. Olive oil is delicious.
Yes.
But if you're going, when people talk about intermittent fasting, right? A lot of people are doing intermittent fasting, including bodybuilders.
I'm currently experimenting with that also. I plateaued though. So the benefits I was getting with it after doing it for a long time, I'm no longer, I plateaued with it. So I will have to disrupt that a little bit and do something
right.
different and then go back to it.
Do you like peanut butter? That's the first question.
Unfortunately, I love peanut butter, but peanut butter doesn't love me back. When I was first diagnosed with diabetes, I discovered I could eat lots of peanut butter. And I did for a very long time until the day that I couldn't. And because I love peanut butter so much and the rest of my family eats the natural peanut butter, once a month I will try a teaspoon to see what happens. And thus far, except for
right.
1 month where I didn't get a bad reaction, but I did when I ate more than that,
okay.
That spoonful is enough to convince me that it wouldn't be a good idea for me to have peanut
okay.
butter. I get a really weird taste on my tongue, and then I start sweating. So that's a no.
Good. That's an allergy. Yeah, you definitely don't want it. Are there any nuts that you do eat or enjoy?
Yes, I experiment. Currently, walnuts, Brazil nuts, almonds, cashews, and pistachios. Although I experiment with other nuts occasionally, those are the ones that I stick with the most. And also with pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, and
right.
sunflower seeds.
Okay. Do you have a food processor in the house?
Yes, I use a blender primarily, but we have a food processor as well.
Food processors tend to make better butters. And the thing is that the reason we're using peanut butter, the reason I tell people peanut butter is because it's cheap. Almost everybody enjoys it. But there's a fistful of people who have allergies, don't do too good with it. So we have to have alternatives. And you really, to do this right, want to have your food processor in the house, because you're going to make your own nut butters. And you could take some pistachio nuts any of the things, pumpkin seed, whatever, and mix them together into a kind of butter that you find flavorful, and then mix that with coconut oil, okay? And the reason you want to get a lot of coconut oil is because that is the energy that is going to power the repair. Yeah?
Yes, I've heard that
in
your writings and in our last conversation. So it does indeed repair the coconut. Does the MCT oil do that as well? Because from my understanding, that's
does.
The coconut oil too.
Well, absolutely. It's extracted from coconut oil.
Yeah.
The thing about MCT oils, right, is for a lot of people, they cause digestive upset. And so I tend to avoid MCT oils because coconut oil does an equivalently good job. And in fact, probably a better job, because it's a mixture of carbon, when you identify fats, it's always by carbon chain, they always go up by twos. So you've got C6, C8, C10, C12, C14. The reason also that I like coconut oil is because the C12 is lauric acid, L-A-U-R-I-C. And when they started doing research into lauric acid, they did it because babies don't die. Every baby should be dead. They don't have an immune system. There was an assumption until well towards the end of the 20th century, that mother's milk contained an antibiotic agent that keeps babies alive, kills viruses and bacteria and fungi, right? Now, antifungals in the drug world are incredibly poisonous. Antivirals, there are no generic antivirals that you can give to anybody, right? And yet, so they tested mother's milk to see were these factors present, infecting them with fungal, bacterial, and viral diseases, or bacteria with viruses, and they discovered It killed nothing. Then they gave its babies, and they titrated some out of the baby's stomachs after a couple of hours. And they discovered that it had become an incredibly potent antiviral, antifungal, and antibacterial. So it kills everything.
Okay?
But what it doesn't kill is the healthy bacteria that are supposed to be in your gut. So I think the most important element, first of all, C12s are they're right in the MCT category, right?
Uh-huh.
But they're not as far down the chain. But they are, they can dance around them, the carnosine shuttle, like mischievous kids, and get into the burning process, no trouble at all. So you get this double whammy. And if you're interested, the compound that's made from lauric acid in the gut is monolaurin. Now, monolaurin has been tested. Any lipid-coated virus, it will kill. Now, the most common lipid-coated virus we're all familiar with at the moment is the virus that causes COVID-19. Right? So if you get into your coconut oil, and get lots of coconut oil into you with, you know, nice tasting things, you'll do yourself a world of good by making monolaurin. Now, the thing is that the pharmaceutical companies are horrified. There's a compound here that they can't patent, and it is being sold on the internet by companies that say, hey, you know, you can take this, and if you get sick, it's a very good idea, maybe, to get some. I have a stock of monolaurin that I keep to, if I need that extra hit. It has a problem. It melts at pretty high temperatures, 165 degrees, which means it doesn't necessarily digest well when it's in lumps. Yeah, when you're making it molecule by molecule in your gut, it's going to digest beautifully. But when it's in clumps, it doesn't melt at a good temperature, which is good for our digestion. So I take that stuff because it tastes pretty hideous. You know.
Okay.
And I'll sort of put it through. I'll take it. What's that?
The taste doesn't matter if it's going to provide a helpful and healthful benefit, then definitely it's worth looking into an experiment.
Well, the thing is, but this is what babies make out of mother's milk. That protects them while they have no immune system whatsoever. So you think about when it comes to COVID-19, effectively, we have no immune system whatever because we don't have an immune response to it. So we get the disease. So the thing is, it's like, for me, if I have a problem with a virus, there's two things I do. Based on a study published in 2017, they took people with influenza, and they gave one group 50,000 IU of vitamin D, and they gave the other group no vitamin D. And the group that had vitamin D, every single person was free of influenza within 2 to 3 days.
Wow.
2 to 3 days, the influenza was totally eradicated. Now, you can understand Big Pharma with this one as well. How can you tell your people, how can you sell pharmaceuticals to people when they can get something that is very helpful and it costs them $16 for a 2-year supply. Because, you know, what I take is 150,000 IU of vitamin D a week. Yeah? But it's oil soluble, so you don't have to take it every day. You know? And that 50,000 a week, the other thing is, UC San Francisco has been trying to get the word out of vitamin D for years because they've been researching since the 60s. And one of the things they have said is that if women would take about 8,000 IU of vitamin D a day, we would reduce the incidence of breast cancer by 80%.
Wow.
Now, why isn't that information out there? Because it would put surgeons out of business. It would put the drug companies out of business in breast cancer. You know, and this is the point that nutritionally, right, that all of our nutritional weapons have been stripped away and remain unpublicized other than published scientific papers. We live with this. As a result, the old remedies, you know, dietary remedies, herbal remedies, Chinese herbal medicine, all of that stuff, doesn't get any airtime because in America, that's not pharmaceuticals. And pharmaceuticals own the politicians and the radio stations and the television stations, you know, advertising,
mm-hmm.
and make hundreds of billions of dollars a year. Huge industry. And so there's a huge imbalance here. Now, if you look at the reason I named my book The Mount Olympus Lifestyle was because once we get our bodies on track, right, once we get them so that they're running like a well-tuned engine, and that means they just hum along, they make any demand on your body, and it just does it. Once you get to there, all the breakthroughs that are being made now are happening in longevity. Within 20 years, we'll be able to live 80 years longer, and we'll be able to rejuvenate.
Wow.
In fact, the Chinese have a huge project on this now, because they have over 1.4 billion people. They had the one-child policy for many years, and they've done away with one-child policy, but they have a huge aging population. Now, if you can take somebody who's currently, say, 60 years old, and you can reverse their age so that they're now 40 years old, that gives you 20-year breathing space. It gives you an extremely experienced and knowledgeable worker, somebody who's wise in the ways of the world. And it means you're not going to be supporting a gigantic geriatric population, because if people can work, they will. And the key to getting there is how you maintain your body. So the reason the Mount Olympus lifestyle is the next thing for the human race is that we are going to be able to live indefinitely, whether it's 800 years or 10,000 years or 500,000 years.
Wow.
And it sounds ridiculous.
No, right? I don't
it
think
it sounds ridiculous. But the point is that if you don't develop the kind of mentality that will encourage you to exhibit the kind of vitality, you're not going to make it. And all these people, they get older, they give up. I mean, it's like you see people do less and less exercise. Yeah? Now, you say, like, you can't lift the weights you used to lift. Yeah?
But I can do other things.
Okay.
Like we had discussed before the show, I believe in adaptations and resilience. And just because I can't do one thing doesn't mean I can't do something else. So I exercise around an hour a day, sometimes more, but I don't do the same exercises I did like 10 or 20 years ago. I do different things now, and I'm always experimenting with that as well, because I believe in exercise.
Right. Point I was going to make is you can keep lifting heavier and heavier. Once you get to your sweet spot, that you can pick up heavy weights again without doing damage, you'll be much better oxygenated. Your muscles will be much readier to work. You'll have much more strength from the same muscle mass. It is an interesting transformation. Yeah, I had a couple of years ago. Actually, it was October 2018. I was in amazing physical condition. Yeah, people mm-hmm. would walk up to me at the gym and go, "Yo, it's like, how old are you?" Right? And I'd tell them 69, and they just about fall over because I was more cut than any of them.
Uh huh.
It's yeah, I mean, it's like, then I got pneumonia. I was in the ICU for 4 days at death's door. Flocks of people coming in. And I was unconscious, you know. And then a week in the hospital, then 3 weeks of rehab. And they warned me that from this pneumonia, I would quite possibly not walk again. And if I did walk, I'd be walking with a walker, right? In my 3 weeks of rehab, in the third week, 3 days before I left rehab, I was walking around without a walker, taking it slow, making sure I didn't fall. But I was back to that kind of thing. And the hospital staff, particularly in the rehab department, they would just stand there silently when I was getting rehab. You know, they have occupational therapists and they have physical therapists, and they're not allowed to say you're doing well because you might slack off. And they're not allowed to tell you you're not doing well because that might demotivate you. So they have to just maintain this stony face, and it does, occasionally they just blurt out, you know, when it's like before I left, they lie you down on the floor and say, okay, you put yourself up on this and you're going to sit here. So in case you fall, there's practice getting up. And I just stood up, sat down. And one of the therapists said, hell, I couldn't get up that fast watching from the other side of the room. It's like if you condition yourself, all these things, and it's not a matter of killing yourself. And I found the gym a very relaxed social environment. And the people who are working out too hard, you know, I just sidle up to them and say, you know, self-hatred is a terrible value. And particularly young guys, they're working themselves out because they hate their bodies. And it's like, God, if you don't start coming from a place of love and respect for what you're building, you won't build them. You know? If you're building your own house and you hate what you're building, you're going to have a crappy house.
Right. You
know? So it's like you really do have to be objective. And the most important thing of all is that everything that causes us long-term damage is stressful behavior, stressful activities. You know? And that is the one thing. Look at everything in your life. From the perspective is, does this stress me out? And that's where you do redesign of your lifestyle. And that is redesign. This brings up another one, and that's management skills. People who can't make successful lifestyle change are always bad managers. They can't come up with a plan. And it's, the thing is, people come up with plans that are bad plans, they're stressful, mm-hmm. they can't stick to them. They come up with plans that's going to punish themselves back to good health. That's like the boss who says, I'm going to keep firing people until morale improves.
Right.
I mean, you've got to take this from a very practical perspective. So I'm now 72. We are learning so rapidly at the leading edge that there would be no problem right now with what we know to get to the point of downhill race skiing when you're 100. Yeah? No problem at all. And the thing is, it's going to get easier and easier, but it's going to be only for people who pay attention. You know, it's like if you have a beautiful car and, you know, say back in 1967, you bought a Mustang and you keep it beautiful. Keep it beautiful. Look after it. Maintain it well. Then in 2021, you've still got a fabulous vehicle. But if you park it out in the backfield and let it rust, what do you expect? And the thing that makes a difference is love, right? That's
right.
Funny how when you love yourself, it's much easier to be lovable and to spread love to other people.
Very true. A lot of people don't realize that. They feel they need to hate themselves in order to love other people more, but that never makes sense to me.
Wow. Particularly in America, boys are raised toting they're inadequate. The thing that, and the thing is that when you raise boys like that, girls are very unhappy because the kind of boys they get are not the boys they want. They want confident, aware, lovable boys. That's the cornerstone. But they don't get that. But this, when parents judge their children, it's like, and they judge them negatively, it makes the child very insecure. Yeah. So change. The Chinese have an advantage because they had Confucius. Confucius was a product of a civil war that went from 550 BC to 205 BC, right? The times of ancient Greece, right? Where where you are see such admirable values. And Confucius was one of the school of 100 philosophers. They were trying to figure out, what will it take to stop this goddamn civil war? And they thought about the relationship from a brother to a sister, a brother to a brother, father to son, to grandfather, to grandmother, all this other stuff. They defined human relationships, and they extended it into the political. What duty do you owe your emperor? And what duty does he owe you? And one of the Confucian values is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Yeah, his values all turned up in the New Testament. And
filial piety, he said,
poverty shames the emperor, right? And since China's been getting rich the last 20 years, the United Nations reports say they cannot believe how fast the world has been pulled out of poverty. And it's China that's doing it. It's really important. I think it's really, I'm not an expert at Buddhism or Confucianism, but it's how it works is that Buddhism defines your relation with God, and it's only you. It's a personal connection. It's not used for social control or mega churches or anything else.
Right.
It's your personal connection with God. You develop your personal connection. Confucius is all about morals and your behavior and how you should treat other people. So where the Bible puts it all together in one big mess, the human values are defined by Confucius, and your striving is defined, your spiritual striving is defined by Buddha. And so it's that neat separation, which is the huge strength behind China, and which why for the last 2,500 years, you know, they've had, God knows, all sorts of things. But every time Chinese society comes back together, it comes back together around Confucian values and Buddhism. And it was Mao who in 49 said, we're not having any more of this family stuff, Confucianism and Buddhism. And it was about 40 years later when the Communist Party in China said, we are embracing our old social values. And since then, China has gone from strength to strength. And they've turned from a bunch of really, really nasty rat bags into a very moral people. And the change is profound. And it's like we're still talking about China as though they're China 1949, not China 2020.
Right, right.
So, I mean, the thing is, we are here for the long term. You're in your 60s. I'm 72, right?
Mm-hmm.
I probably don't sound 72. My
hearing,
by the way, I had an audiology test, and my hearing, the audiologist looked at it and said, why did you have a test? I said, I want a benchmark. I want to put a stake in the ground to see how much hearing I've lost. And he said, you have the hearing of a healthy, perfect hearing 17-year-old. Now, I posted my audiology chart, you know, the graph, on Facebook. As a photo. One of my friends came back One of my friends came back and said, I test kids between the ages of 6 and 10, you know, for hearing. And you have the perfect hearing of a 7-year-old.
Wow.
So, yes, it's like I have perfect eyesight. Now, I need glasses, but I can see things that kids can't see. And it's all rate of repair. You've got to focus on the rate of repair, because what happens as we get older and we eat foods that are not appropriate for our body's energy production, the rate of repair slows down. And that means there's a whole lot of damage that doesn't get fixed. People go deaf, they go blind, they get obese. All sorts of things happen. And, you know, you lose your physical vitality. And most people accept the fact that they won't be having much of a life after the age of 45 because their bodies are in collapse. And the thing is, you can do everything. You know, I've been camping for the...
I believe that, and you've given me a lot of motivation to explore certain avenues. And I will extend an invitation with our Monday shows. It's generally folks that I've come to know. I don't believe I've met any of them personally, but over the years we've had these conversations on the podcast. Longevity is something, or longevity is something that is a common concern. So I was thinking of launching a series on longevity for a year or so, just to explore that. Well, and I think something.
I tell you, once you launch it, once you launch it, you won't be able to cut it off at a year.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's because longer the science is evolving so fast. Yeah, I mean, yeah, the science is moving forward so fast, it's mind-boggling.
So I was going to ask you if you wanted to be part of that conversation. I would love to have you on more often. I love talking to you, and you're a font of information that's well-backed by science. So your pleasure to have you. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'd be very happy to do that. I think, too, that... it's a very good time for people to reconnect and find ways of reconnecting, because COVID-19 has done such social damage to so many people. I mean, it's so nice to get together with your friends and laugh and make them laugh, you know, and watch their physical reactions to crazy stuff, you know. Yeah. I mean, so if we can do that, you know, on a podcast or whatever, that's very nice. And I think to record it and put it out there, we'll cover enough topics for people to go, oh my God, you know, that really is possible? Yes. God made all things possible. God made all things possible.
To spark that conversation and to provide people with things to explore and to learn about and experiment with. I'll give you an example. Every now and then I take a break from the vitamins. And I was taking a break from the vitamins, and also I was eating sugars in the form of dried fruit from my Mediterranean heritage to readjust my body, because it had gotten like out of whack again. So I played for like a week to back on whack. I'm back on whack now, so I can start isolating what I did that worked. But anyway, I stopped taking the vitamins for a while because there were too many fears for me to focus on. And yesterday I noticed that my vision was blurred again. So I took Ocuvite or lutein, and within a day, I could see perfectly now. Yesterday, I was struggling with my reading glasses to make things out. So if you find the things that work for you, the results are miraculous. Because until I found the Ocuvite or the lutein, I thought I was losing my eyesight. And it turns out that I just need a nutrient, and that if I provide that nutrient, then my vision requires no assistance. It's fine.
Right. I take this one vitamin pill that I've taken for years. And that is, it's made by Twin Lab, who are out of Hong Kong, from New York. And TwinLab are a pharmaceutical quality vitamin manufacturer, and they do other things as well. And they have been on the leading edge to the point where the FDA, had they chosen, could have prosecuted them for the stuff they for some of the things that they were packaging up that now are recognized as vitally important to good health. TwinLab is a company.
Okay.
And for you and for any man, they make a one a day. It's, I'll tell you the name, I'll look at the bottle. It's TwinLab Daily One Caps without iron. And they're not sort of $60 and lots of hype. It's sort of, they're inexpensive. I mean, for, and after a week, take them for the first week, and like 180 capsules, like $23.
Okay.
It's like, that's half a year's supply.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I mean, and the ones you want to get is without iron, because excessive iron is poisoning American men and is the reason men die younger than women. Iron is a growth factor for every bacteria and fungus. And when you, and we have no way of excreting iron other than bleeding, which is why women don't have a problem, because they bleed every month. Once women go through the change, their death statistics closely mirror American men. And it's highly likely that it's that one of the big factors is iron poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you know, we could talk about this later. I think one of the blood tests that's really worth doing is total iron binding capacity, which tells you how much iron your body can hold. And your ferritin levels is just called an iron panel. And if your doctor is doing your 6-month medical and you've got medical insurance and, you know, and blood tests are covered, they should do all that for free. Yeah?
Yes, I have to go
routine
get checked. It's been a while. So that is something I will definitely ask. And unfortunately, our conversation for today is nearing its end. I had a wonderful time. I learned a lot, and there's a lot for me to research. I called up a few of the things you said on the computer, so I'll be reading it after the show. Can you tell us how people can find you, how they can explore the wonderful things you're doing, and where they can purchase your book?
Right. Yes, they can purchase this on Amazon. My name is Richard Hamilton Gibbs. So if you look up the Mount Olympus Lifestyle on Amazon, you'll see the book. I've kept it as straightforward as I can because people who know the science don't need to read a long tirade. What they need is concentrated, because out of this information, it's like having the makings of a plot. You have to you have to wrestle it into a screenplay. You have to wrestle it into something that is a lifestyle change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that this is, you know, the most important takeaway from this is you must learn management, because without management, there's no point in living for 500 years, because you probably won't. You have to manage your life, your lifestyle, and it has to be low stress and ultimately totally enjoyable. Yeah, and that's a hard act to get together. I already have a couple of Facebook groups, but I've done nothing on them for years. You know.
Okay.
I've been thinking a lot about this for years
I have a lot of groups that are inactive too. I have a handful that are very active, and then I have lots of them that I started that they didn't really catch on. So every now and then I revisit and update them and try again. But I have like 3 or 4 groups that are very busy, and those are the ones that keep me busy as well.
I think it would be wonderful to go back to the Olympic principles.
Me
and
too.
I think you're right on the right track. Yep, I think that we have got to start looking at the values of our ancient forebears. Yep. Because they had it down.
so very much. This was awesome. And I'm looking forward to our next conversation already. Be well, my friend. And I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Yeah, pick specific topics, okay? You want COVID-19?
Okay.
You know, whatever you feel like, because I've got it all. You know, I mean, I follow this stuff like a hawk. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic.
All right.
We will start this journey and we'll get into longevity very, very shortly. I'm still pulling that together with scheduling, but that should be starting by March or April as a regular feature. And thanks
great.
To everybody who joined us tonight, whether you listen live or whether you're going to be joining us later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. We're going to close with If You Can Dream by Virginia Ackley.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you can dream. When love and trust are deep and fair, there is nothing your heart won't dare, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. Dream. Dream.